From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. As a new week begins, we have protests and policing issues still taking priority. COVID numbers, as I'm sure you're seeing, are jumping. A face covering order from the governor has been in place in California since last Thursday. That's for all indoor public places. But there are cities and counties with no plans to enforce it. Your ears may be telling you that the sound is different. I'm hosting from home today because a family member spiked a fever yesterday. We're waiting for a bit more information. And I happen to think it's better to be safe than sorry for all of us. And CAP Radio, of course, agrees. So bear with us. If we have any technical issues, we're going to pause and get reconnected to one of the backups as quickly as possible. So for the latest picture of COVID-19 across the region, we're going to begin with our Monday Mayor's Chat. And Stockton's Mayor Michael Tubbs is on the phone. Mayor Tubbs, welcome to Insight.
Thank you so much for having me.
Mayor Tubbs, would you talk about the COVID numbers in Stockton and San Joaquin County right now? And I'd like your perspective. I'd like your opinion about where they are and what's happening with the upward movement.
Yeah, our COVID numbers have been increasing every day, but at a faster rate than they were before we were granted variants and before we started to kind of move forward with reopening things. Our ICU numbers we're looking at very closely. Our hospitalization numbers, we heard that in the neighboring city, Lodi, the hospital is no longer accepting people who aren't COVID patients because I guess there's like an outbreak of COVID-19 among staff. So we know in Stockton and San Joaquin County that although people may be tired, although it may be summer, although we want to get back to how things were before, that's going to be very hard to do so without a vaccine, and that we all have to do our part because this virus is real, and it doesn't care what news stations you watch. It doesn't care who you voted for president. It just cares if you wear a mask and if you're staying at home and wash your hands and socially distancing. So definitely concerned watching the numbers, particularly given the fact that now that we're open, I would like to stay open, but also given the fact that so many of my community have comorbidities with asthma, diabetes, obesity, et cetera. So doing everything we can to be vigilant about ensuring people understand the importance of wearing a mask as a statement of public health rather than politics. And also making sure that folks understand the importance of social distancing.
So let's say something about the phrase you just used, I'd like to stay open, because there's a lot of discussion about now that everything is open, there's not really going to be any rolling back, and we're going forward hoping for herd immunity. Are you in that same camp, that's the direction to go?
I'm not. In terms of my understanding of just exposing everyone to the virus without knowing who and how the virus impacts, and just hoping that social Darwinism is actually very scary, and not what a civilized society does to deal with a global health pandemic, in my opinion. So I think that's why I've been pushing for months now to have a mask ordinance to make sure that as we open up, that folks are protecting themselves and their neighbors. That's why I've been working overtime on figuring out what this contact tracing looks like. So if there is an outbreak, to let people know so that they can quarantine. That's why I've been pushing to make sure we give masks to small businesses, we give hand sanitizers because we understand absence of vaccine. That's why I'm also pushing people stay at home unless it's absolutely essential that you go out. And that's why to support small businesses, we've given grants, et cetera. I understand it's a difficult time for everyone to take sacrifice for everyone, but this idea of just opening everything up, not knowing a lot about this virus, but having a lot of knowledge about how it really impacts the most vulnerable or the least among us or the elderly, those that society should be organized around making sure that they're protected, is troubling to me. And I think as a man of faith, as a Christian, I think, part of my faith tradition teaches me to make sure that we're doing good towards everyone. So this idea of just opening everything up and seeing if people get sick, they get sick, it's fatalistic. It's nihilistic, and I think it's against who we are at our best.
Mayor Tubbs, you were completely outvoted by your city council on the issue of masks, but now Governor Newsom has put into place this mask mandate or requirement for all indoor public places. What is Stockton as a city and then San Joaquin County as a county going to do in terms of enforcement?
I can't speak to San Joaquin County in terms of what they're doing, what they're going to do. I look forward to hearing at their board meeting tomorrow. I know for the city of Stockton, it will be enforced the same way we enforce the stay-at-home order. Again, this is an issue of public health. So cops, especially given the conversation we're having about law enforcement in this country, probably aren't the best first case or first responder to someone not necessarily wearing a mask. So we spend quite often a lot of time with our small businesses and also using our civil process to let businesses know kind of expectations on them to partner with the rest of the community in terms of being good neighbors and ensuring that your employees have masks and PPE, ensuring that social distancing is followed in your business, ensuring that you have clear signage about the need for masks in your place of business so that you have, and that you encourage your customers to do the same. But I think part of the mask ordinance is to signal to the public how serious it is. I heard from so many people over the past 3 months that, well, if it was serious, Mayor Tubbs, you would make us do it. So I think that the idea that now it's a law, more people will be like, okay, this is actually a serious thing, and we won't need cops checking people for masks on or knocking on doors. So that's just not the type of world or city we want to live in.
One more question. In terms of African Americans and populations that are being especially hit hard by COVID, that are more vulnerable for a variety of reasons, what needs to be added to the picture of response or strengthened in the response that isn't happening or isn't there right now?
That's a great question. I think, number one, explaining the causes for this disparity. So I think, again, with this conversation around herd immunity and people are seeing different outcomes based off race, it leads to almost a genetic social Darwinism. And the issue is not that Black people genetically are inherently more likely to get sick. The issue is that Black people live in a society that's been structured in many cases, as we've been discussing, by racism. So because of lack of access to grocery stores, lack of safe environments, because of environmental injustice, African-American communities and other communities of color have high rates of diabetes and other comorbidities or in asthma because they are more likely to live next to freeways, which have a lot of like toxins in the air. Also, I think just really explaining to people that COVID-19 and even these George Floyd protests are an opportunity for us to examine our society and do everything we can to make sure everyone at least has an equal opportunity, because despite what people may want to believe, the data shows us the outcomes of COVID-19, the George Floyd civil unrest has shown us that that's just not the case, and that in 2020, it's really incumbent on us not to bury our heads in the sand and live in a fantasy world, but to deal with the hard truth of the society we are so that we can push it to the society we want to be. So that looks like, I think, things like a guaranteed income. That looks like added support for organizations serving populations that are most likely impacted by COVID-19. We know that the PPP small business loans from Congress, 95% of African-American and minority-owned businesses did not get access to that institutional capital. So it means very targeted intervention since we know where the problem exists.
All right, Mayor Tubbs, thanks so much. Here we are starting a new and very hot week in addition to everything else going on. So take care.
You too, and I hope everything's well with your family.
Thank you so much. That was Stockton's mayor, Michael Tubbs. Ann Schwab is Chico's mayor, and she's on the phone with us now. Mayor Schwab, thanks for joining us on Insight.
Thank you for having me.
Before we talk about COVID-19, will you give me your perspective on the PG&E trial last week?
Well, PG&E rightfully admitted guilt for causing that fire. But it's so disappointing with the settlement amount. Our DA, Mike Ramsey, said, we're treating corporations by people, but we can't put corporations in jail. If this was a person who had caused the fire, they would have been put in jail. And said fined for 85 deaths. However, There have been many people who have passed away as a result of the injuries or the trauma they experienced during the fire. So PG&E, once again, has gotten off very easy in this.
Do you have a scope by numbers of how vastly this has impacted people's lives? If you're going to take that number higher than 85 and in different descriptions, can you give us that picture?
Well, think about all the people that lost their homes, a whole community. How do you get someone's life back? When you're 20 or 30 years old, then maybe you can start rebuilding. But when you're 50 or 60 or 70, just the years that has taken off of people's lives.
So let's then talk about COVID-19 on top of the situation, which is how a lot of the stories about the region have gone. What are the current numbers of COVID-19, and how much of a jump are you seeing in Butte County?
Right now, we're at 94 cases, and I was looking at something yesterday, a letter that I sent to Gavin Newsom asking for, or telling him about the impact in our community and asking for the ability to open up a little earlier than other regions. And it was dated May 26th, and at that time it said, we had only had 18 confirmed cases by May 5th, and now we've jumped up to 94. So that's pretty dramatic.
Of the jump in those cases, what's happening with your most serious, with people needing an ICU bed or the number of people who have lost their lives?
Well, fortunately of this, we have only lost one person. Only one person has died, and three people are currently hospitalized. So we still are able to treat people who are coming down with COVID-19. However, if it continues to grow, our capacity will be limited.
Can I ask you personally what you're most concerned or even fearful about right now, at this point, June 22nd, 2020?
What I'm the most concerned about? A much more dramatic increase in cases, and it's not being able to treat them. And I'm also concerned with our economy and our local businesses that may not survive this. We have.
Well, I know.
You asked.
Well, I was going to say, when there was a fire alert near Oroville last week and some evacuation happened, my mind went to the fact that we're moving into that hot, dry season, and how on edge everybody in Northern California, but especially in the area of a wildfire scar and tragedy, kind of stepped to a new level of anxiety.
Oh, yes. Pretty high anxiety, pretty high trauma, number of children that have been affected with ACEs, or number of ACE scores, are one of the highest in the state, and that was pre-COVID and pre-fire. And now I can just imagine that this trauma has hit every individual. But we try to continue our everyday lives, however modified they are. We're fortunate to have a large municipal park. I was just out there this morning, people walking their dogs, trying to move on, just trying to figure out what this new normal is.
And the ACE score, if people don't know, I think is that adverse childhood experience score, the level that a young person has already endured in their life, correct?
Correct. It's people who may have lost a parent, someone who has experienced sexual trauma, poverty. It's a number of things that affect young people.
We're going to leave it there for today. We wish you well and safety during this hot summer season. Thank you for the conversation on Insight.
Okay, thank you, Beth.
That's Chico's Mayor Ann Schwab. West Sacramento's Mayor Christopher Cabaldon is on the phone. Mayor Cabaldon, welcome back to Insight.
Good morning. Always great to be with you, Beth.
Would you talk about your city's COVID-19 situation? You've been issuing warnings. I know this isn't your style, but are you feeling any bit of, I told you so, I told you this might happen?
No. I have been concerned. I'm working a lot with the public health folks nationally and regionally around what the right metrics are and what the right policies are. And everyone's muddling through and struggling with this. And I don't think anyone in the public health system anticipated sort of the politicization and the weaponization of some of these issues. And so what would normally have been warnings and guidance that would be followed by the vast, vast majority of us, or nearly all of us, just hasn't. And so even sensible or policies with reasonable risks can go very wrong when they fall victim to that sort of politics and fake news kinds of stuff. And so it's been a challenge. In my own city, we just over the last week we've seen more cases than at any point during the entire pandemic, including what we thought of as the peak back in April. And Yolo County over the weekend literally broke our scale. There's a scale that one of the metrics is epidemiological stability, and we're not supposed to have more than 55 cases over a 2-week period. And the scale goes from 0 to 100. We just hit 109. So we're at twice the condition that was required for us to enter into what's called attestation by the state and give us more flexibility. And so it's very concerning. It is also important to emphasize we have not had a surge in deaths and hospitalizations and some of the most severe indicators. So this is one indicator of several. But this is the beauty and the gift of this indicator is that it doesn't involve massive death and disease, and it gives us a chance to take action, both as communities and governments, but especially as individuals and families.
I have learned to ask daily in a conversation like this about the COVID case numbers, because even though we have the Johns Hopkins dashboard, we have the statewide dashboard, we have the county dashboard, case numbers are changing, as you say, so fast, so quickly. What to you is the breakdown in how much of the surge we're seeing being because of testing, increased testing, versus person-to-person transmission?
Yeah, so we can't know for sure, but there's some good reasons to believe that it's not due principally to testing. First is that we've seen a steady increase in testing over the last several months. But what we've seen in the last 2 weeks, really statewide, but certainly in Sacramento and Yolo and in my own city, is a very rapid ramp up. So that we have not increased testing that much in the last 14 days, not by even close. So it cannot be solely because of testing in that regard. It is important though to get smarter about some of the data, because we're so used to the case data. It's the only data that's, along with hospitalizations, that's consistently reported. But what we really want to know is what are the data among asymptomatic tests, because those are giving us a sense of the population. Symptomatic tests, if you're like, doctor, I feel sick, I might have COVID, and you get a test, that's useful, but that's not really telling us a lot about the outbreak in the population. So we need to know the asymptomatic case rates, and we don't typically get those reports. And then along with that, we need to know positive rates, not for folks with symptoms, because many folks with symptoms will have a positive test. But for those that don't have tests, positive rates of under 5% or under 3% are really key. And that data is not consistently reported. It's not available to the public. And that's problematic in our region. Just as an example, both in New Orleans and in my own county of Yolo, when we started doing asymptomatic testing, we found positivity rates of about 4% plus or minus, some places like mine a little higher, some places like Davis a little lower. But among Latinos in both my city and my county and New Orleans, double the rates, which we never would have known just from the regular testing. And it's why it's so critical that we all get regularly tested, at some of these free sites that do it for folks without symptoms.
And just as a benchmark, national health leaders want that positivity rate to be under 10% everywhere. So if what you're saying is true, that it's up around 9% or more among the Latino population in certain areas, and certainly it is under in other vulnerable populations, that's going to set off alarm bells across the country for not only the statewide look at the hot spots, but the national look as well. So what are you urging now? Go ahead.
Well, still the number one thing for residents is to avoid gatherings of any kind. And you know, so we, I think folks know but are not following the guidance with respect to bars and that sort of thing. But quinceañeras and birthday parties and grandma's grandpa and grandpa's anniversary parties, avoid all of those, along with consistent social distancing and masks everywhere. Those are the critical. But also get tested. That whether or not you have symptoms, it's free and easy to do all over the region now. So absolutely get tested, both for yourself, but also to allow us to have the Sentinel system. Look, we're not going to. There is no it's safe or it's not safe anymore. We're going to have a lot of different warning signals. This is more like flying a plane than it is a yes or no. And there's going to be a lot of a dashboard with a gazillion different indicators on it. And we're going to have to pay attention to all of them. No single one is going to drive our decisions, but we must pay attention to them. And we have to take advantage of the fact that some of these give us warning signals far in advance of the worst outcomes in terms of massive deadly outbreaks. So it is important for all of us to really pay attention, to take it seriously, and not just look for a quick report that says, yeah, okay, this I saw this study out of Korea, and maybe it is okay for me to go to my cousin's graduation party. It isn't. So stay safe and get tested, and then support folks in the media and politics that are advocating for paying attention to the science in a way that is smart and mature and is paying attention to the triggers so that we can take the appropriate action. And also recognize government can't save everything, right? We don't issue permits for a birthday party. We can shut down a bar, but we cannot shut down grandma's anniversary party. That's going to be on all of us to do the right things. And those are the things that have caused the worst spread.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad we had your voice in this conversation. Take care.
You too, Beth. Thank you.
That's West Sacramento's Mayor Christopher Cabaldon, and Sacramento's Mayor Daryl Steinberg wraps up our Monday Mayor's Chat. I think we're talking home to home today, Mayor Steinberg, because I'm broadcasting from my house. I believe you're in yours, correct?
No, I'm actually at the office today, Beth, but with my mask.
Okay. Well, let's start right there. The governor issued a mask order. You've been in favor of masks, but what's the Sacramento Police Department going to do to enforce the wearing of them?
Well, I don't know that there's going to be a strict enforcement regimen here, and that probably isn't appropriate. I think where the police see pretty flagrant violations, they will warn people, as they should. But I don't see a massive enforcement writing of tickets. Look, what you hope and what I've seen as I've been out over the last couple of days is that when it becomes a requirement, more people comply. There are some that don't, but I was on our street on Saturday and Sunday, and I would say, 75-80% of the people had masks. Now, should it be 100? Of course it should be. Should there be warnings to people? Yes, there should be. If people are flagrantly flouting the law, should they be cited? Yes, but this is not about enforcement. It is instead about setting an expectation and a requirement and doing our best to keep people safe.
Give me your expectation on COVID cases in the city, included in that hospitalizations and ICUs. What do you think the numbers are going to do over the next few weeks?
I don't know. I mean, I will say it's any increase, of course, is too high. And I've seen, of course, we've seen the increase in our county and our city, not unlike other parts of the state. But I will tell you that it hasn't been as large as maybe it could be, especially given the protests where people were gathering in the hundreds, many with masks, but many without masks. We could have seen a much larger spike. And so the numbers are still relatively low, but it's always a cause for worry, which is why I think the governor's call for mandatory masks statewide was absolutely appropriate and necessary. But I don't know. I hope that we, you know, if we do see an increase, that it is sort of at the pace that we're seeing now, as opposed to something that, you know, gets higher into the four figures. And certainly the test, the real test, is hospitalizations and ICUs. And we haven't seen that surge materialize, thankfully.
Let me shift the topic here. You said you're working at your office, and in the discussion of proposed police reforms, Black Lives Matter, the Sacramento chapter, and other groups have been pushing at you and city council members and the city manager to open up the meetings in a way where more of their voices and their input can be heard.
Well, we
What's your take on that? What's possible?
Well, I would like to open up the council chambers as quickly as possible, but we also have to follow the public health order. And certainly what we know is that gathering large numbers of people inside any venue is not consistent with the public health. Now, we have had, and it's been pretty successful, we've had dozens of people call in by telephone and give their full public testimony as if they were in chambers. Now, it's not the same as being physically present. I do understand that. But most of my colleagues are out of the chambers. I've been chairing most of the meetings from the chambers. Last week, I think I chaired the meeting from my home. But we will get back to normal order, so to speak, as quickly as we can. But we don't want to crowd people into a council chambers for all the obvious reasons.
So, Mayor Steinberg, what's the timetable then for voting on reforms? And is this going to stretch into a time period where there might be different opportunities for different voices other than just by phone?
Well, I know that, you know, for example, this morning I have a large Zoom meeting with a number of African-American leaders to talk about reform. And you ask, when will there be the first bit of action? A week from Tuesday, June 30th, we're going to vote to establish an inspector general in Sacramento to create full, independent, transparent, publicly disclosed review of any officer-involved shooting, death in custody, or force which results in serious bodily injury to any resident. And we're going to begin setting the direction, including a $5 million appropriation, to establish a new department to have non-law enforcement response to 911 calls that don't involve crime, which I believe is the seed of systemic reform. But we're going to begin next Tuesday with a vote, and we're not wasting any time. And I don't claim, Beth, any of what I'm suggesting is the end or even the middle of the discussion, but my heart and my head are fully into reform, but to that, I just want to proceed in an assertive but a thoughtful way, and I think that's what the people expect.
One last question, different topic. You have involved yourself in some ways in the discussion about the future of McClatchy and the Sacramento Bee. Could you just state very clearly what you want to do there? And there are boundaries for what you can and can't do.
No, I have written now to the bankruptcy judge a couple of times. And my point to the judge is that independent journalism is not just a matter of dollars and cents in business. It is a civic asset and a vital civic asset, just like any other civic asset. And especially in the era that we are living in now, to have independent journalism of all kinds, print, radio, television is vital. And I do not want to see the Bee go into the hands of some hedge fund that decimates the paper. It's already been hurt enough in terms of the cutbacks in staffing over many years. And I think it is part of my role as mayor to make sure that the bankruptcy judge knows that this isn't just an asset to carve up without thinking about the community as a major stakeholder in how this is decided.
Mayor Steinberg, thank you again for a Mayor's Chat on Insight. Glad to have you with us.
Glad to talk to you, Beth. Thank you. All the best.
And you take care. That's Sacramento's Mayor Daryl Steinberg. Up next, another change of topics. We're going to get to unemployment benefits. Law expert Jennifer Shaw is back with us today. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. California's unemployment rate fell to 16.3% in May, with 3,018,000 people still unemployed as the economy has slowly reopened. And the numbers for June will be released next month. Many people are still applying for unemployment insurance or waiting to receive benefits. On the phone with us is a very popular guest, Jennifer Shaw. She's the president of Shaw Law Group and an expert in employment law. Jennifer, glad to have you back on Insight.
Good morning, Beth. It's great to be here. Thank you so much.
Tell me how the pipeline is flowing. Are there a lot of people waiting and feeling stuck right now?
Well, that is a great question, Beth. And I can report that at least some people are getting their benefits a lot more quickly than they were the last time we spoke. So there certainly has been an effort by the Employment Development Department to speed things up, to streamline their processes, and to make things a little more understandable to folks when they apply so they get it right the first time. So I am definitely hearing anecdotally that people are getting responses. What I think is still confusing to people is that there really are two systems of unemployment right now in California. There's the regular unemployment insurance program, and then there's the pandemic unemployment assurance or assistance program. And what's confusing to folks is that you apply for the benefits at the same website, but the pandemic benefits are only available to folks if they have a job loss or a wage loss because of COVID. And remember, those are the benefits that apply to the independent contractors and the self-employed and those folks. So one of the things that I think is still causing confusion for folks is they go on the EDD's website, they apply for benefits, and you have to explain what benefit you're applying for. If you get it wrong, it just delays the process. So a lot of what is going on right now is the EDD is trying to help people be sure they're applying for the right benefits so they can process a little more quickly.
Let's say someone has applied for benefits and received the letter or the email that says, yes, you've been approved. Let's talk about the next step, which is certifying. And what do you do if the EDD website doesn't give you the option to certify?
Well, this is what's interesting. The EDD's website says that you're supposed to certify every 2 weeks that you are not working, or you at least have to reveal what wages or compensation you've received during that time period. And there are different rules if you're unemployed or you're a gig worker than if you were a regular employee. So some people are not able to certify because the EDD says, look, we're just going to assume that you didn't have any income. And from what I'm hearing, the EDD is processing those applications, even if people are not certifying. The reason there's no way to certify online is that the ED doesn't need that particular individual to certify. Now, I will say there are folks who have then received denial letters because they have failed to certify, and they have to go into the Ask EDD sort of prompt on the website, and they pose their question and say, listen, I wasn't able to certify. I was later denied benefits. I need to understand what's going on. It's taking a couple of weeks for people to hear back from those Ask EDD questions, but they are getting responses.
And that speaks to the fact that you're in the system, the checks haven't started coming yet. There can be a lag. Once the state checks start coming, there is even a gap then if you're going to receive the federal money for those checks to come, correct?
There can be. And let's just clarify for folks, because we talk about checks, But really what's happening in California is you get a debit card. So there'll be a card that comes, and then benefits are loaded on the card. And those are going to be both the state benefits and the federal benefits. But Beth, you're right. There is a delay sometimes, not always, but there is a delay between when someone is approved. There is state money loaded onto their card, and then the $600 a week federal money comes. The good news is it is retroactive, so they will get that money, but there is sometimes a delay. Now, having said that, I just spoke with an employee this morning who I've been trying to assist through their employer, and she said it was a two-week process, and she got both the federal benefit and the state benefit immediately, you know, at the same time on her debit card. So I do think that if anyone has anything unusual going on, for example, they worked as an independent contractor, then maybe in January of this year they were made an employee. Now the EDD has to go back and say, all right, did you have enough time in as an employee to be entitled to regular benefits? If you didn't, we're going to put you in the pandemic pile, and that takes some time. So if anybody has anything unusual, it is still taking a while to get those situations handled. I will say that I'm very pleased that the EDD is now processing those requests to ask EDD. They have been inundated, as you can imagine, with almost 28% unemployment. Well, and the numbers are even showing greater at this point. But they are starting to respond to those, which is good news.
I'm glad you said card, because it's also the alert that that card can seem like offers you get in the mail, the kind of mail that you just throw away. You tear the envelope in half, you toss it in the garbage.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Well, and part of this, I feel like, Beth, that we could be doing a much better job at is PR, right? Letting the public know and how this really works. And that's why I'm so grateful for what you're doing on your show, because people need to understand it's not going to be a big envelope that says, this is your unemployment debit card, please open it. The EDD is understandably worried about theft. So just like when you get a regular debit card in the mail, this is going to be a plain white envelope for most people. And it's very common for people to throw them away, contact the EDD, I haven't received my card, and then the EDD will reissue a card. The problem is that takes a lot of time. So one of the things that I've been telling folks to be really careful about is take your time as you're processing. I know it's frustrating. Make sure you're dotting your I's and you're crossing your T's so that you can eliminate as much as you can that back and forth.
So as the economy reopens, Jennifer, can someone who doesn't feel safe going back to work continue to receive unemployment benefits?
Probably not, but we have to clarify doesn't feel safe. So part of the situation that we have to remember is there are a lot of new benefits available to employees who need to be home to take care of an ill family member or who can't go to work because their children can't go to school or the daycare provider is not open back up again. As the economy begins opening, we have more schools opening, we have daycare providers, we have summer programs, those sorts of things. And as the sort of understanding of what these rights are becomes a little more clear, folks have to understand that if you're just saying, I don't want to go to work because I'm nervous, I don't have any specific concern, it's not like I think my employer is doing something wrong or I think there's some specific risk to me at work, I just generally don't want to go, those folks are not going to get unemployment. And there's even a provision in the Pandemic Unemployment Act that says you can be put on what's called a penalty week if you provide false information or you are not clear about the reason you think you are eligible for those benefits. So people need to be very careful to be honest about, look, I'm just having anxiety. Now, if they have documented medical anxiety about going back to work, that may very well be a legitimate reason for them to get unemployment. But many employees have the misunderstanding that if they just would prefer not to go back to work, that they can somehow keep getting those benefits. And it really is a situation where the unemployment, both the regular and the PUA unemployment, are intended for people who are out of work through no fault of their own.
Here we are in June, by the way. How did that happen? I can't be the only one that feels that way.
I know, I can't believe it either. I just think not only are we in June, we're almost done with June.
Yeah. So there's a retroactive aspect to benefits, and yet the calendar pages keep going by. So how far back is retroactive at this point?
Well, that depends on when the person actually lost their job. Are they applying for regular unemployment? Are they applying for the PUA unemployment? So in other words, if they lost their job or their hours are reduced or their pay is reduced because of the pandemic, they're going to be covered under PUA. If they just lost their job because the company said, look, this is a great time for us to restructure, we're going to lay a bunch of people off, then it's not related to COVID and it'll be a regular UI claim. They can generally go back to early February. And the EDD is making good on that. They are issuing a lot of retroactive funds and deposits to these cards for people who applied. And even if they didn't apply on time, if you will, they didn't apply when it first happened, they didn't understand the benefits, so they went ahead and they waited and they applied later, they are also getting retroactive payments. It's just taking some time. Now, the really interesting thing, of course, is we only have a little more than a month, 6 weeks or so, until the $600 a week is going to run out. And that payment, that benefit has been such a huge lifeline for so many people. I know Congress is talking about extending the deadline. We don't have anything firm at this point. There is definitely some partisanship going on back in Congress, not surprisingly, about how much of a benefit they actually want to give. But it's going to be interesting because with that $600 a week, some people have actually been able to bridge the gap in terms of rent, food, that sort of thing.
Right.
Without that $600, that is a huge cut in resources.
Well, that means to be continued. We'll have to talk to you again in a few weeks. Okay, Jennifer?
Sounds good, Beth. Thank you so much. You stay safe and healthy.
And you take care, too. That's Jennifer Shaw, president of Shaw Law Group. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. The Uplift is next. This is Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. All right, on your toes for today's Uplift. It's the Sacramento Ballet. They have summer classes, and there are two-hour Zoom classes for children besides what's posted online. On the phone to explain how it's working is Artistic Director Amy Seiwert. Hi, Amy. You and everyone else in the arts community has had to be so creative. How's it going?
It's going okay. Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. Fortunately, the word of the day is pivoting, and dancers are really good at pivoting, so that's what we keep doing.
All right, talk about these virtual summer camps and the pop-ups for little kids.
Great. So, yeah, the camps will all start in July, and those are week-long sessions. These are geared for kids around ages 5 to 7, and they all have a theme. Like, the first one is Pirates and Mermaids, and they're very much built on what we used to do in the studio. But we've also taken into consideration Zoom fatigue and how you engage, especially the younger kids, in this format. So the good news is we've been working on this kind of since April is when the school first went virtual, and we've really kind of looked hard at what's working well and what's not, and these have adjusted for that. And we do have one just hour-long pop-up that's happening on June 30th based on the fabulous story, Dogs Don't Do Ballet. And that is just an hour-long session. It's the story, it's movement with the story, and there's a craft all built in. So that's kind of a mini version of a camp, just a little hour-long thing. But that happens on the 30th. And, you know, we're hearing from a lot of parents that just even these little times where they can get the kid engaged in an interactive activity, not just sitting in front of pre-packaged content, that it's really helpful. And I think as the ballet and as a nonprofit, we're really trying to figure out how to serve our community in this time. So if that's helpful, we're going to do it.
even the public online videos, for example, there's a conditioning series. There's mm-hmm. a class for people who are at risk of falling to help prevent falls and strengthen the body. I think there's just such innovative content there. We'll post a link to the website. But how is the economic stability? And, you know, we might be in this situation for another year, 18 months. How will the ballet weather that?
As well as we can. I mean, it's a crazy time, right? We're in the middle of three concurrent crises happening right now. So we have a health crisis, an economic crisis, and a social crisis all happening at the same time. And how do we weather all of that? The good news is it's an opportunity to rethink a lot of things we have done in the past and look at our models. Sacramento Ballet has always kind of been in the national landscape of a company. We are what is considered small but mighty. And because of that, we're a little more agile than some of the larger organizations, and we're able to rethink things pretty swiftly. We are launching today. We're launching something called our Fanster Pass, and that is the opportunity for people who love the ballet to kind of step forward and do a kind of like a membership model, almost like a Netflix. You pay by month, and you get exclusive access to some of our archival works, as well as digital content that will be world premiere content just for this platform. And we've also made that as accessible as we can. The original thought was $25, $50, or $75, but also doing a student educator veteran rate of $20. And then also just saying, hey, and if you can't do any of these rates, if you can do $10 and you want to be able to watch the ballet and you want to be able to stay a part of what we're doing right now, like, that's fine too. Everyone, especially with COVID, I mean, I heard Jennifer speaking earlier, like, everyone is in such a different situation right now, and you know, how we can deal with that. And if we can offer some of this stuff online in a way that will help support the organization making it through this, but so importantly, support our community, then that's what we're going to do.
Well, you make a bold promise that you can keep 5 to 7 year olds watching attentively for 1 to 2 hours. The pictures of it happening have me pretty convinced. So I think it's a creative and a nice summer option.
It's great. Karen Camilos is our children's division lead, and she has spearheaded all of that, and she's been amazing in the work she's done for this.
All right. We'll post a link to the Sac Ballet's website. And Amy, take care. It's wonderful to see you and the company so present in the community as it is with all the arts right now. So stay safe, and thanks for joining us.
All right. You as well. It was great to talk with you.
That's Amy Seiwert, Artistic Director of the Sacramento Ballet. And again, the link will be at capradio.org/insight. I am seeing that Governor Gavin Newsom and the Senate President and the Assembly Speaker now have announced they have an agreement on the next state budget. So there will be a press conference at noon. You will hear that hosted by Randall White. And I'm sure there'll be more budget news at that point. So in these final moments of the show, I want to share with you a change that's happening at Cap Radio. There will be a new Insight host taking over the show at some point soon. And I will be leaving at the end of next week. This is a change that some of you know that I have contemplated for quite a while. Cap Radio has done the same, and some of you are going to be surprised by this news, but please give the transition some time. This is a new season for Cap Radio, for the newsroom, for Insight, and for me. And I'm looking at it as one of those opportunities that come out of upheaval and adversity, which are certainly the hallmarks of life in the year 2020. Insight is a powerful point of contact for the region. You are a loyal and valued audience. You understand the voice that this broadcast can give to the community. And so it's really been a privilege, and sometimes, honestly, a challenge to be with you over the last 8 years, especially in this season of COVID, which continues to be, at least for me, a moment-to-moment responsibility for finding the most accurate and important information. Add to that the social revolution of this time and how crucial it is to hear truths from as many people as possible, and we have, I think, a more significant duty than ever before. So the work of weaving and hosting the show has engulfed my life. That's been good in so many ways, but I'm so looking forward to retrieving some of that time and finding my next best and highest use. You might hear me make a few more comments before next Thursday, but for now, I think you've got the picture. Those are the highlights. So for today, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Take care. Stay safe. That's Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruyak.